Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, we're going to do a blast from the past. We're going to talk about the Linux Outlaws podcast and see what legacy it's contributed. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 492, recorded August 8th, 2018, The Legacy of Linux Outlaws.
Six Gun Productions. New media, new rules.
You're listening to Linux Outlaws, episode 371 for August 8th, 2011. I'm Fab from Hamburg.
Hey, this is Dan coming to you from Liverpool in the UK. 2011 was a while ago, man. That was like that was a minute, as they say. Cool. So, yeah, it's good to be back for another week. So I've had an interesting week, actually. I've been on the geeky side of things. I've been playing with ZFS, or ZFS, as the Americans like to call it, quite a lot. And I spent the last 2 days dealing with some deduplication memory usage on that. That was fun. So I've rebuilt a RAID Z array about five times in the last 2 days. And now I think I've finally got it right. So I don't know. You know anything about ZFS?
No, nothing at all. It's too complicated for me. I've been building websites in Hugo, which is static websites written in Go. That's doing my head in.
Oh, Go. Okay, cool. Well, we've actually got a guest today, which is cool, isn't it? We've got a third time guest, returning guest, the one and only Randall Schwartz, who is the host of Floss Weekly, which you may have heard and seen me on as well, and legendary Perl programmer, creator of the Schwartzian Transform. Which sounds like an amazing prog rock band to me. But there we go. So Randall, how are you doing?
Wait a second. We're not on Linux Outlaws. This is Floss Weekly, episode 492, talking about the legacy of Linux Outlaws. I'm not a guest on your show. You guys are guests on my show. That'll be great. So let's talk about Linux Outlaws. So how long did it last? How did it get started? Either of you guys can take that one on.
Yeah, Fab, you start and I'll jump in if you want.
Well, we started in 2007 and it lasted for 370 episodes. We pretty much did one a week. Pretty much 7 years of shows, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was weekly as well, is quite difficult. And people are going to hate it when I say this because they'll think I'm being, I don't know, maybe they'll think I'm being a bit conceited or something. But for two people, just the same two people to do basically almost every week for 7 years, it's quite a lot of effort to manage to do that because it was all the production stuff. So, I mean, we didn't have, other hosts that we could say, I'm not here this week, you do it. So although we did do some stuff on our own, I did interviews and Fab did interviews. Occasionally we'd go to different conferences when we weren't, together and we'd do interviews and play those in. But it went for 370 episodes. It was a lot of fun. Just kind of exploded, really. I don't think we expected that.
And like you said in your intro to me, or intro of me, I've actually been on it twice before. So that was episodes 117, which I couldn't find online, but I did watch 227, and that was September 4th in 2011. So, as I recall, I'm trying to keep Floss Weekly down to about an hour, but as I recall, Linux Outlaws was more like 2 hours, right?
Yeah, that was a constant... Well, I nearly said a constant battle, but that's not really true. I don't know. We kind of saw eye to eye on almost most things, mostly everything. But I don't know. Originally, I thought it should be about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and then it grew to an hour. And I was like, all right, I'll do an hour. And then it was like, we'll just go a bit over the hour. And then it grew to like an hour and a half. And it got to the point where like every week, I'd be the one going, all right, let's stop now. It's 2 hours. We've done what we need to do. Can we just wrap this up? And then other people would be going, no, keep going for another 4 hours. And all I was thinking was, somebody's got to edit this.
Yes. Somebody,
and That's not fun. Well, it is fun. I like editing, but you know, for every kind of 10 minutes of audio, because the way we intensively edited it, it would be like, it could be 20 minutes work, you know, because you're not just listening to it. You're going back and taking out something and listen to it again and make this sort of sentence works properly and doesn't sound like it's been cut together like Max Headroom. So there was always that as well.
And we also had a 3-hour hard cutoff once we started on the hardware recorder, like at least the one I had over here. Has, I think it's the 4 gig SD card, I think. So it can only record 3 hours. So that was always the cutoff.
Yeah, as if by magic, I managed to produce my recorder as well. This is what I recorded nearly every show on, a really old Zoom H4, not the H4N, which people are probably familiar with, which stands for like new. And that came out.
I got that.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. He's got the H4N. So the thing about the H4N is I'd say to people, I haven't got the new one. And they'd go, what, you mean the one that came out 6 years ago? And I'd yeah, I've got the original one that looks like this. And also, it looks like a taser as well. So if I went to airports and things and went, can I interview you about this? The people would go, and like jump back.
Yeah, the I had the H2 for a while that I'd used for my field recording. And that was really, really suitable for particularly, it was particularly small. So it would fit in my bag nicely when I would take it on my cruises. So that was for the few times that I did field recordings. This is back actually before Floss Weekly. This is when I was working on Geek Cruises Newses, where I was actually going on all the cruises and usually taping the most interesting programs and putting them on as a separate show. I don't even know if that's still archived anywhere. We were paying Libsyn for it, and I don't know if that's still even there. So let's talk about the difference between the shows, because of course everybody that's a regular Floss Weekly listener or watcher knows that this is pretty much a magazine single interview format. So we have a little bit of opening banter, we possibly have an ad to read, not today though, and then we have a conversation for 30 to 45 minutes with guests like I'm doing right now with you, and then I do the upcoming shows, but it was never a news show. And I think am I accurate in saying that's the biggest difference between Floss Weekly and Linux Outlaws?
Quite possibly. Yeah. I'm going to throw this to Fab because he did all the news. I just kind of, he'd tell me the story and I wouldn't know anything about it. So you take it away.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I always wanted, I wanted to do the show because I want to keep my English up, you know, talking to a native speaker and obviously doing it every week. I don't know why we decided we want to do it every week, but when you need content and like news was basically easy to come by. And so I've always lived like Linux news and I read a lot of news. So it only kind of came natural to me. It's actually kind of how I later got a job as a journalist, basically because of Linux Outlaws and because of the news section, because I was so in tune with everything that was happening in the open source community, basically.
I like to think that so when we started, I was really into Linux news. I still am. I mean, I still read it all the time, but I was really on top of it. And that was one of the things that I'd often put news stories in the first kind of, I don't know, probably only for the first year or so. I'd put quite a lot of news stories in that I'd been following and Fab would as well. And then as the show went on over the years, it got more that like Fab just did the news because I wasn't keeping up with it. And then I like to think, and this is probably cheating, but I like to think I could play like proxy for the listener in some way who may not know what the story was about by actually method acting to such a degree where I didn't know what the story was about. So Fab would tell me the story and I'd go, who's this again? And what are they doing? And then they'd like it, then explain it to me. So there was that to it as well, I think.
And how did you otherwise divide up the responsibilities for the show? So Fab was mostly about the news. Dan, what did you bring to the picture besides being the proxy for the audience?
Emails, so feedback. I used to So a big thing for me was listening to shows. Funnily enough, John O'Bacon, formerly of this parish, and you know, ex Floss Weekly host, and maybe one day will return. He has been back not so long ago. I listened to a show called Lug Radio, which he used to do. And I used to email Lug Radio, and they must have got a lot of emails, but they never even mentioned it. And I emailed them about 5 times, and they never, ever either read any of my emails, which probably weren't that good, so maybe it's my fault, but they wouldn't read them. And then it sounds like I'm having a go at them. I'm not. I just, having seen the other side of it, I know how busy it can be. And then, one thing I did, one big important thing, I think, for both of us, but definitely for me, was that when we did the show, I wanted it to be, I wanted people to, if they emailed, I mentioned everyone's name, even if I didn't read their email. So at the end, we'd go thanks to and just reel off a big list of names of people who'd emailed us. And we'd read most of them. And that was really important to me. So every week, if we had a week off, which very occasionally we did, the emails would back up. And then I'd have like, say, 50 emails to read through. And I didn't read through them all on air because we didn't have time, especially as I was the one going, we don't need this show to be any longer. So often I'd pick some highlights. But everybody that emailed, I'd pick a little bit out of their email and say, you know, so-and-so sent us an email about this. And then we'd have sections when the people would put things on our forums. We had the old bulletin board forum type system, and we'd talk about things from that. And then later on, Fab would do more of the social media stuff that I wasn't keeping across of and talk about what people had been saying on, you know, various social media and stuff. So I think the feedback, so the bottom line of this is that the feedback for me was really important, because I wanted people to know that we were listening and, you know, that we were interested in what they had to say as well.
Yeah, most of my feedback doesn't come in the way of emails, although I do occasionally get emails, especially when I leave out the two important questions at the end. People do actually write me when I do that, or at least mention in the chat room and say, hey, you forgot the two questions. So, so my feedback mostly comes from a couple of sources. So I get some number of tweets and Facebook follow-up posts and things like that, which I read carefully. Hardly anything on Google Plus. Well, I get comments on the Google Plus every once in a while, so that's kind of fun. But my feedback mostly comes from the fact that I attend, you know, 6-7 conferences a year, and people come up to me and talk with me about Floss Weekly, about the contribution I've made to them and over the years. And so I really appreciate that. So I can see why having feedback for you is important as well, but I can't imagine doing a 2-hour show with news. I'd have no time left in the rest of my week. I already got a real busy week. So, I mean, I figure I put about 4 hours a week into Floss Weekly, maybe 5, and that's it. So that's all I can afford right at this point.
I can't imagine that anymore either. Like, we edited the show. I have no idea how we did that. The podcast I do now, a little show called Geek News Radio. That's the plug in there. We do that twice, like every 2 weeks, and I just do it kind of like, you know, Twitter shows, just basically live to tape. I can't imagine where I got the time, but then also I was a student for a lot of the time, so, you know, that kind of helps.
Indeed. Yeah, and having free time, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit also about the relative responsibilities too. I mean, I sort of alluded to it earlier, but with being with TWiT, it's just great for me because all I have to do is you know, line up the guests, line up the co-hosts, show up on time for the recording like I did this morning. And then after an hour from now, it's done for me. I have nothing else to do. I don't do any of the opening titles. I don't do any of that stuff. It's all done by people at the East Side Studio. Forget what the name is. East Side Studio. Okay, and that's all done for me, and I really appreciate that. That's all done for me. That I don't have to think about that stuff. I don't have to think about putting it up on the CDNs. I don't have to think about, you know, all the labels and stuff that need to be on the show and all that stuff, and or fixing the editing mistakes, which we do occasionally have. I mean, this is essentially live to tape, but we have occasionally probably about one out of every 4 or 5 shows we have to. Maybe we'll more often that we have to stop and recut something because the guest audio went away or something like that. So in that way, producing Floss and producing Linux Outlaws is quite different. That it's just you two guys. I mean, you don't have anybody you can hand it over to. What do you use for video and audio editing?
Well, I used to do all the audio in Audacity, believe it or not. Yeah, a lot of people. So video editing, I didn't do. Fab might be able to talk about that, but I didn't do any of that. Video is not really my game. But sound. So I came to the show as a sound engineer, which I sometimes mention on this show. You wouldn't be able to tell by the quality of my audio sometimes. But I'd spent years in studios recording audio and doing like radio stuff and live gigs and touring with bands and so on. And I've got like a cupboard full of microphones that I'm probably far too obsessed with and similar things. So I had all the outboard gear and the mixers and stuff. So the audio is really a passion for me, and it always has been. So I didn't mind doing that. Although what tended to happen was we recorded the show. So we would talk over, we'd use something basically for VoIP originally, and then we started doing video, so we could use Hangouts, or we could use Skype, or we could use other things, and then we could hear each other, and then we'd each record our own end of the conversation separately, onto separate. So with the H4 that I had here before, what I would do is it's got two inputs. I would it's stereo, isn't it? So I would just pan Fab's voice from the VoIP to one side and my voice coming live from the mic in the room to the other side. So we had them separated and he'd do the same on his end with, so my voice and his were separated. And then I would cut the two local voices together into a stereo track and sync them up using the other reference voices and stuff, which actually worked quite well. And unfortunately you do get a little over a 2 hour recording, you get some slight differences. So by the time you get to the end of the 2 hours, if you haven't done anything to it, you'll get them really out of sync. But what I would do is go through it every 5 minutes or so in Audacity. I would cut out a little bit here and there and resync them so they were always in sync. And then once that was done, I would send that to Fab and he would often do the hard editing, or sometimes I would do that as well. But that was kind of how we did it. And I later discovered that that's really common in radio production, or not really common, but it's quite common. I got to do something with the BBC. Again, I'm name dropping now. I got to do an interview with the BBC and I was really just a guest. This was not for Linux Outlaws. I was really just a guest. And the lady from the BBC, the reporter, said to me, "Oh, have you got a decent mic and whoever?" And I said, "Yeah." And then I said, "I'll record it. I'll do my end and send you my end as well." And she went, "Oh, so you're going to do like a double ender?" And I went, "What's that?" And she said, "It's what people do in radio." So I said, "Oh, right. So, okay." So I didn't invent that then. I didn't really think I'd invented it. But, you know, I just thought, how could we both talk remotely from one in Germany and one in the UK and have, like, we were in the same room was the goal. And I think that kind of worked out.
Well, the audio for your show is always really good. I remember that. It was just, I didn't listen to every episode from episode one, but I picked out a random smatter of things over the years. So pretty cool that way. And I'm doing that here, too. I'm using, I don't have any hard mixers. I have just my Blue Yeti, and I have, I'm using Audio Hijack, which I consider the amazing breadboard for the Mac. It just, you can wire anything up to anything else. I also have the other thing called Loopback, which allows me to create virtual interfaces, and those two play together well. Just name dropping here for that. But anyway, so I'm recording right now a double ender. So I'm taking the Skype audio coming in at me and dropping it on right channel, and I'm putting myself on left channel. And about one out of every 10 or 15 shows, we end up using my recording because Wi-Fi is being finicky or just something just happened in the connection or something. So I can fully understand that. What was your funding model? Is this a labor of love?
Fam, do you want to say that one?
Yeah, pretty much. We just we didn't have ads. We weren't really sponsored. We had sponsoring from hosting company for the service, basically, you know, bandwidth.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, we just did it because we wanted to do it. And I mean, I don't even think like something like this, as Dan said, I mean, we put a lot of work into that. And as you mentioned, the audio quality, that was always really important to both of us. We listened to a lot of Linux podcasts at the time, and we always thought, well, you can up the game a little bit, and that's what we try to do. But I mean, at times we spend so much time doing the show, I don't think you know would have been really, really costly to really get the money back for that.
Was about a day's work each, I think, most weeks. Between us, it was certainly a full day. But it was about half a day at least for me a week, and then half a day for Fab probably. And to be honest, when you're doing 2.5 hour recording, that's half your day gone already, to be honest. Yeah,
the other thing we did that I was always very important to me was the show notes. I listened to a lot of podcasts and they didn't have good show notes, and that always annoyed me. So I spent a lot of time listening to the show, you know, back to the show when it was done, and then like putting all the links in and stuff.
So on the subject of funding, I can elaborate a bit on that. And so as Fab said, it was mainly a labor of love, I suppose. But people were really generous, and they sent us like donations and stuff. And over the years thought about, and we both discussed it, about like merchandising and stuff like that. We were like, we could do, you know, T-shirts, we could do mugs, we could do all kinds of things. I had this idea, I don't know where that came from, but I had this idea that we would sell the Linux Outlaws mugs that people were buying from us. And then we would have a gallery where people would send us a picture of themselves with their mug, and we'd call it Mugshot. And we'd have it on the website, and people would then, so it kind of drive mug sales. And I feel like I'm on Shark Tank now, and I'm explaining my business plan. But or Dragon's Den if you're in the UK. So basically, yeah, we did stuff like that. But most of it, the donations, we got quite a lot. We did have offers of sponsorship that we never took up, just because I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm being really punk and all the rest of it. But I don't know. It just didn't feel right for what we were doing. We had. I'm not going to mention any names, but we had one company that asked us if we would be interested in sponsoring, but they gave us a lot of restrictions on what we could do. And I just thought, it's not worth it, you know, for us. We wanted to be able to say what we wanted and do what we wanted. So we didn't take it up. And also we went to our community and said, do you like this company? And the response in the forums was no. So we decided it probably wasn't a good idea for us to annoy our fan base by associating with this company. And I just said to them, we're not interested. And then the guy thought we were playing hardball. And he said to me, what number is it going to take for this to happen? You know, and he thought I was being like negotiating, like, you know, whatever. And I just said, it's not happening. And then he kept coming back going, just give me a number. And I said, in the end, I said, will you give me a number? And he didn't. And I said, well, basically, it's not happening. And then he said, why? And he couldn't understand that, like, everybody has a price. And I said to him, well, you haven't given me a price for a start, so I don't know if it's my price. But on the other hand, no, it's not happening. So we just said no. And by that point, he'd annoyed me, so we didn't do it. But no, it didn't happen. But, you know, everyone has different models and different costs and stuff and to pay for. And one of the good things about it only being the two of us was we didn't have staff to pay and so on.
And I have to mention that our listeners sent us, and specifically me, a whole lot of beer from all over the world. So nice. I've drunk beer from pretty much any place. We had listeners. Yeah. That's pretty good.
I used to get sent tea, which I like. I like tea. Occasionally I got beer, but not as much. I don't know why people assumed I didn't like beer as much. But I did, in fact. And I don't know what product placements things are like. But this glass that I've got here, this Sons of Anarchy glass, which I was a big fan of the TV show, was sent to me by a listener because we couldn't buy it in the UK. It was only on sale in like the FX store, whatever it was, in America. And I just mentioned on a show that I really wanted one and I couldn't buy one. And then in a few weeks' time, this package turned up with a note in it saying, hey, this is for you. So it's really nice.
I once wrote a review about the Ping the Duck. And I mentioned it once on Floss Weekly. Ping the Duck is... if you read the reviews for it on Amazon, I don't know if the first one's still there, but people were actually reviewing it like it was a story of a ping packet because duck travels all over the world or whatever. And so he talks about what each of the things are an allegory for. And I happened to mention that was really cute on one of my Floss Weekly shows. And I got like three copies of it sent to me. So that was awesome. They're still in my my special shelf. So somewhere in a box, probably somewhere at this point. How long did it take for you two to be doing Linux Outlaws until you thought we really have a show and it's really starting to catch on?
I don't know. I mean, stop me, Fab, if you think I'm talking too much and you want to get in on this. But I mean, for me, it was pretty quick, actually. So one thing that I'm sure you probably, you can give us your feelings on this in a minute, Randall, but one thing I found with the kind of free open source software and hardware world was that people are really easy to kind of get to talk to. We could have done a whole show on, you know, Microsoft or Apple or Oracle or any other Coca-Cola or any other big company, and they would never have wanted to talk to us. They would never have been interested. But what happened with us very quickly was we realized in the first 6 months to a year, what started to happen was we'd talk about people like they were never going to hear it. So, I mean, one example is someone like Miguel de Casa, who had a lot of controversy around him at the time, and he was doing stuff with Mono and all these other things. And we'd just talk as if like he wasn't going to be interested in what we had to say. And then he came on the show to refute things that had been said and like wanted to talk to us. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's like doing a show on Apple and then like Woz wants to come on and talk to you about it. You know, that's not going to happen, is it? I mean, Woz is great, by the way. I don't want anyone to think I'm bad mouthing him. But, you know, that kind of thing. So that happened to us quite a lot. And another good example was Pulse Audio, which was an absolute car crash. When it started, and Leonard Potering, who I can't say his name properly, but Fab probably can in a second, we had a massive problem with that. So you were talking about with your Apple audio stuff before. That was, and now Pulse Audio is great on Linux and it works really well. But when it came in, it got introduced before it was finished. And we had a really big rant about that. And we complained about Leonard and all this stuff. And then I think Fab met him at a conference not long after and interviewed him. So go on, Fab, you can take over with that one.
Yeah, I think that was at Guadec. I met Leonard, and he was a bit like, you know, what are you saying? But then, you know, I realized he's a nice guy, and he realized I'm a nice guy, and then we just got into talking, and it was kind of cool. But at first, that was scary. Yes, in the beginning, it was. I mean, I like a rant. People who listen to my shows know that about me, and there was a lot more freedom in the beginning when we thought, oh, we have 10 listeners, you know, they really like us and the rest doesn't care. So we can say whatever we want. And then later when people actually, caught us, you know, said on somewhere on the internet, like, what the hell did you say about me?
That was interesting. But what I found anyway, and I will throw this back to you in a sec, Randall. I'm back in the co-host mode. I should take that off. It's a visual joke for everyone listening to the audio stream. I found really quickly that, people like Jeremy Allison, I spent a lot of time with Samba Guru in Portland, funnily enough, at Linux World. Anyway, Linux Foundation conference, where I also met Linus Torvalds. And you were there, Randall, although we didn't speak that much at the time. And you interviewed Linus with John O'Bacon, I think, at that time. It was interesting, And I met Bradley and Karen from, at the time, the Software Freedom Law Center and all these other things. And Karen went on to be the GNOME project leader, chief executive, like the GNOME Foundation, executive director, sorry. And then Bradley was formerly the executive director of the Free Software Foundation. He basically worked right hand in hand with Richard Stallman and people like that. And then you get to see Linus Torvalds and stuff. So I don't know. So there is a question kind of at the end of this, Randall. But do you think this world that we're in of free and open source software makes it more accessible than other forms of, you know, software or other products in general?
Well, I think it would be harder to have jobs, or not have jobs, well, Steve Jobs, not mentioning him yet. It would be harder to have closed source companies come and talk to us with the same freedom, I think, because everything is their secret sauce. And part of the reason I talk about open source projects on this show is I want people to get involved. I want people to know that these projects exist. As I say at the beginning of the show, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it. I mean that intensely because I want there to be involvement. And I also want people to understand the breadth of what's available in the open source world now. And I think in my 490 shows, I think we've pretty much demonstrated that. And the fact that I can keep booking more and more guests, although it gets a little skinny sometimes, I keep booking more and more guests by going to conferences, seeing what people are doing, talking to them about things. I'm still pretty close to having the guys from VS Code on, which would be a real amazing thing to talk about Microsoft really making a big pivot on open source across the board, including having things like Visual Studio Code be available all open source. Just an amazing combination of that. And I'll do one more name dropping, actually, because it's a special day today. It's Woz and Janet married on August 8th, 2008 at 8:08 p.m. You can tell Woz is into 8. So this is their 10th anniversary, I think it is. This is 18. So, it's their 10th anniversary today. So happy anniversary, Woz and Janet, if you're watching. So
question, Randall, but have you met Woz at all? Because I know some people who have, and he seems incredible.
He was on three of our cruises. In fact, that's where he met Janet. So his current wife. Wow. So,
have been best man.
right. No. But I have one of his business cards, which is actually a metal printed card that has his phone number. As I won't give it out because it's not for me to give out, except there's a lot of eights, and I'll just say that. And it's printed as a Hollerith card with actual holes punched in at the right digits. So it's pretty impressive. So I met Woz.
Not to go on too much of a tangent, but I did hear a story from a friend of mine who was in a position to have worked with Woz and known him. And I think it was in the Next Step days, they were working together in a room with, say, 10 coders. And he just joined this team. He was a junior developer. And he said he'd watch Woz typing away. And then periodically he'd just stop and kind of look at, like, into the space for like a few minutes. And then he'd carry on. And he said to the guy next to him, "What's he doing?" And he said he's compiling the code in his head. And now, I don't know if that's true, but quite impressive if it is.
Yeah. I wonder how he upgrades that compiler.
Yeah.
What if he finds bugs in his compiler? That would be really sad. Actually, a question from the chat room is, does the business card cut steak? I believe it would, Virgil. I'm not totally sure, but I haven't tried it for that use. I've kept it very carefully in my bag of special items. So, So let's get back to talking about Linux Outlaws. So, the title is Linux, but did you cover the breadth of open source?
Yeah, we did that. We did that from the beginning. That was kind of the thing. I mean, we were both Linux advocates, I would say. No, we liked to use it, but we covered everything. I mean, the name is the name came up. I mean, you just mentioned Microsoft, and it's just in my head. I just started thinking about how much things have changed. I mean, one of the reasons why it's called Linux Outlaws is because back when we started the show, when you used Linux, you kind of felt like an outlaw. You felt like you were doing something wrong. You know, that was the time when Microsoft was still saying, you know, the GPL is a cancer and all of that. Things that people today can't even remember, because now Microsoft is like this open source company. That is amazing how much the world changed in that time.
Yeah, it's good that I don't want to spend too long talking about Microsoft, but we went from a position of, like, they were really aggressive towards all free and open source software at one time, or they seemed to be. And that's not the attitude of the engineers, of course, because, you know, they usually just want to use the cool technology. But certainly business-wise, there was a very strong push that, you know, everything that wasn't built in-house was horrific and terrible and all the rest of it. But things have changed, and it's really nice. But we also got pushback from the other side as well, because you mentioned it was called Linux Outlaws, and people used to say, oh, people come up to me at conferences and say, "Oh, so you just talk about the kernel, do you?" And then walk off. And I'd say, no, we talk about everything. And they'd go, "Well, why isn't it called GNU plus Linux Outlaws or GNU / Linux Outlaws?" If you go back further, I believe GNU plus Linux.
Because we're sensible. We're sensible people.
Fab's a linguist, so he'll have more to say on this. But I thought that, you know, language, it develops, and if people just use something more and more and more, it becomes the common vernacular, if you want to call it that. And people say Linux. I run Linux. I could say I run GNU / Linux or GNU plus Linux. But 99.9% of people I said that to would have no idea what I was talking about. Whereas if I said I run Linux, they go, "Oh, I think I've heard of that." And it starts a conversation. So that was my kind of, or our reasoning for that. But we did also talk about the kernel, and we talked about, you know, drivers, and we had Greg Crow Hartman on, who was the maintainer of the driver project, Linux kernel driver project, all these kind of things. So we did do all of that. But then we'd also talk about Android and other things that were open source. And then we got the whole open source versus free software thing, and that wasn't, people didn't like that. And there's a lot of politics involved anyway.
Yeah, I once accidentally just said Linux around RMS, and he immediately stopped what he was doing, turned over and stared at me and said, "Do you mean just the kernel, or do you mean the kernel plus all the user space?" Yeah. And I said, "Well, I actually meant the kernel plus the user space." And he says, "Well, then it's GNU Linux." And I was once on a cruise with Linus Torvalds himself. He was actually been on 3 or 4 cruises. Well, I've met a lot of people on cruises. It's been really awesome over the years. And I met a lot of people through this show, which is also just a privilege, actually. This is I'm going to do this show till the Twit Network doesn't let me do it anymore. So hopefully that's not next week. So, yeah, I love meeting up with people and getting them to come on the show. So, but I was on a cruise with Linus, and I walked up to him and I said, do you mind when people say GNU Linux? And he actually physically grabbed me in a headbutt and said, "Don't ever say that around me again." Wow. So he can't say it publicly, but I'm going to say it on his behalf. He actually believes that RMS is overstepping boundaries there. But anyway, that's enough about name dropping for a moment or two. Mm-hmm. What Now, over the 6 or 7 years that you did this, I forget what the actual number is, like 6 years? Something like that.
Right? 7 years. Yeah, 7 years.
7 years. So over the 7 years, what was the most surprising thing towards the end that you wouldn't have predicted at the beginning?
Wow.
It's a tough question.
We're both kind of looking at the sky and going,
I think you're compiling.
I'm compiling, yeah.
Yeah. The amount of listeners we got in the end, I mean, at the beginning, we were like, well, if we ever get 100 listeners, that would be great. Oh, yeah. You know, that'd be awesome. And suddenly it was thousands. And then when we stopped, when we said we're going to stop the show because we think it has run its course and, you know, we're ready to move on, we got an incredible outpouring of people. I mean, people still, to this day, on Twitter, sometimes, you know, come up to me and say, oh, I miss LO. And yeah, I would have never expected that.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shock. So when we decided, we discussed it secretly that we were thinking of, we even did that secretly with encrypted messages because we were like, what if like the NSA finds out or something? I don't know. But when we were toying with the idea of discussing the end of the show, we didn't do any of that publicly, even over like unencrypted emails or anything, because we were worried that someone would see it and it would be, I don't know, a problem in some way. But I actually thought towards the end, it felt like it was great and I enjoyed the show, you know, immensely and right to the very last second of it. But I felt like, I don't know, that we were doing the same things a little bit over and over again, and it needed something fresher or newer or something. We needed to reinvent maybe. And that was kind of what we were planning to do. As my kind of health situation changed, that didn't really happen. But we didn't come back with the show. I mean, Fab has, he mentioned it, but unfortunately I haven't managed to be on it yet, but I'm sure that'll happen at some point. And people then changed their tune. But I actually thought people weren't that bothered by the end. I was thinking, they must be fed up of this by now. And, you know, they probably had enough of this show. And then when we said we were going to finish it, suddenly everybody started screaming, no, you can't finish. And I thought, oh, maybe they do care after all. That sounds really bad because it sounds like I was just doing it to get, you know, attention. But it wasn't. It was just surprising. At that point, we decided as well. So we decided we were going to do the final 6 shows that we were going to do, which was kind of a joint idea, I think, at the time, because we were called Six Gun Productions and we had the whole revolver Six Gun thing going on. I said we should have like final 6 kind of bullets, you know, 6 rounds, 6 shows, and then we'll finish. And we decided what we were going to do, and we did, and people were great, and they still are. And people still, even as Fab said, to this day, say to me that they enjoyed the show, and that's really, really nice. But I always say to them, well, do you do a show yourself, or do you do anything? And they, oh, I don't know if I could do that. And I think, well, you know, we were like 2 guys that nobody wanted to listen to in a, you know, in different countries, and we managed to make it work. So if you, why not just do your own show? Everyone could do one, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, you know, you could, it doesn't mean they'll all be good, but you know, or all that I want to listen to them, but it doesn't mean also that if I don't think it's good, that it isn't good and somebody else doesn't think it's good. I'm getting philosophical now, but yeah, anyway, so well, Fab, so you take over.
That was always one of our other things. I mean, we did an episode where we explained into the smallest details how we record the show, and had diagrams and everything. And we would always try to tell people, well, you can do this. It's not that hard. I mean, I think we used to joke, like at the time we were producing everything on Linux. And we're like, you can even do this all on Linux. And yeah, that's something that was really important. Another thing that I still to this day find really, really weird is when I'm somewhere at a conference or something, or I went to Australia last year and I met a listener of ours down there. Who always wanted to meet up, and it's always really weird to me when people come up to me. It's like, oh, I'm a huge fan of yours. And it's like they treat you like a star, and I'm like, I just did this podcast from my bed.
I don't know if we lost the network connection there. That was interesting. So this is the interesting thing about doing shows live. Our show wasn't live originally. It was live to tape, as you say, Randall, but it wasn't live, so people couldn't see or hear it. It was just us talking to each other. So if we messed something up, we could. We did just do it in one go usually, but we could say, oh, you know, let's redo that bit or let's do this. And then we started using Icecast. So I set up an Icecast machine for audio streaming. People seemed to like that, so they got onto the whole internet radio side of it. And then when we started doing Hangouts, we were able to do that live straight to YouTube. And it changed it a little bit. We didn't really change it because we always did the show in one take pretty much. It definitely like changed it a little bit, I think.
So if you wanted to give some warnings to people that want to start new podcasts, what would be your 3 most important things to make sure people are aware of before they get started?
Don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. Make it like, if you want to do a show, you got a show in your head, you have these ideas, you want to do a certain format, make it easier. If you want to do a show a week, it will be a major achievement if you manage to do a show a week for, let's say, a year. And it will get, you won't imagine, like if you set out your perfect show and you think, I can do that every week. No, you can't. You know, doing it once is okay. Doing it twice is okay. Three times, maybe. It'll get harder and harder and harder to do that. So the easier you make it for yourself in the beginning, the more chances you will have to just keep it up. And even then, it takes a huge amount of tenacity to just get yourself motivated to do the preparation and do all the stuff. Even if you really enjoy doing the show, and that was the thing we had. Like, we always really enjoyed doing the show, enjoyed talking to each other. All the stuff around that will be such a drag at times that you really need something to keep yourself motivated.
Yeah, and one more thing, too. I'll add to that, just to add to the list of things I was going to give people. It's like, if you work out a budget for how much time you think it's going to take, be sure to multiply that by three, because it'll take three times whatever you think it's going to take.
It will. And if it's fun to do as well, it should be. I mean, obviously this is fun for you to do, Randall, and you get to meet loads of great people as well. And that's really nice. And that was the thing about our show, was it was fun to do. So it didn't feel like a chore. It's just like talking to a mate talking to a friend for a couple of hours about stuff that you've done and stuff that's going on and all of that. And if you keep it like that, then that actually, I found, was what people responded to. And they go, oh, it's really great, the kind of persona that you've made and this thing and that and the other. And I just think, that's kind of just me, really. You know, I couldn't come on here and pretend to be a persona. I mean, I could. Let's be honest, I could. But what's the point in that? If they don't like me as me, then maybe it's not worth bothering. So I don't know. That was just my kind of philosophy, I suppose.
Remember that people actually thought we script the show? Remember that?
That was funny, yeah. People used to say, do you script the show? And a two-hour, can you imagine how long a two-hour show script would be? It'd be like, you know, like this thick or more. Yep. And again, a visual reference for all the audio listeners. So it would be ridiculous. And you know, every time we'd mess things up and we'd go and ah and, you know, say things that we weren't supposed to say. And then people would go, oh, it's brilliant the way you scripted that. And I think, you think I actually wrote the mistakes in the script as well? And I'm reading those. You know, that's a level of script writing that I don't think I'm capable of or I want to do.
Well, that's one of the things I like about Floss Weekly, is I deliberately don't over-prepare, and therefore my time is limited, so it works out nicely. Mm-hmm. I get a bunch of show notes from the guests, and I only open those up like morning of the show, and I'll get all my hardware set up so that I can have a physical recording studio here, and then I can I'll just start looking at all the URLs they sent, and maybe the YouTube videos. Sometimes I discover they sent me a YouTube video that's an hour long, and I went, I've only got 40 minutes before the show, so I guess I'm not watching that one. All right, well, that's fine. But it takes discipline. It takes and it takes just stay to itness. This is 11 years now for Floss Weekly, and I had all the first 17 shows under my belt, so. It's been fun and interesting, and I keep wanting to do it. And as I'm gonna keep doing it as long as Twit lets me, because it's just a great thing for me to do. It's been great visibility for my career, which is I don't know if you guys can speak to that, but I think Fab said you got a journalism job out of this, right?
So I was a student when we started the show, and you know, I was pottering around like you do as a humanities student. You don't know what you want to do. I always kind of wanted to do a journalist. I guess this is why I kind of started the show as well. And then I just saw a tweet of like a publication in the UK who wanted a writer. And a big reason, I think, because I got the jobs. They wanted somebody who knew about Linux news and was immersed in that scene, and I did all the news preparation for LO, so I had a lot of experience in that, and yeah, that kind of got my career kickstarted, I guess.
And it did help me as well, although I was kind of going through a long period of kind of physical illness at the time when the show started, but I was getting a bit better, like cancer treatment and other things, and so I wasn't working basically, but I was doing freelance stuff on the computer and programming and other things, so and I'd been a sound engineer, and I'd always loved I'd never really wanted to be on the radio as such. I certainly couldn't say I'd dreamt of being on the radio since I was a kid, because I really didn't. But I actually found that, obviously, I talk a lot, as you're now experiencing. So it was quite good. And people would say to me, oh, you've got a really good radio voice. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll get something off that. And then it did lead to other things. So I produced other shows for other people, which I produced quite a few shows. I produced the Free As in Freedom show, which is coming back, I can tell you, in the near months, in the coming months. That's going to come back. I've been producing that for Bradley mm-hmm. and Karen, and they had direct access to the likes of RMS and other people, and like Jeremy Allison, I mentioned before, I was introduced to by Bradley, who's a really good friend of his, and so on. So that was really cool, and that helped a lot as well. So I mean, from just doing something for a hobby, it did definitely help. I mean, I got to shake hands with Linus Torvalds. And I was a guy who just used Linux in my bedroom and thought, or GNU plus Linux if you prefer, in my bedroom, and thought nobody would ever care. And then I'm stood at a conference next to Linus Torvalds actually chatting to him for all of 5 minutes, but he didn't like run away, or maybe he felt he couldn't, but he didn't run away. But yeah, he was really nice to me, and I was like, oh, he's cool. And then later that night, you were playing pool with him in a bar, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yes, I've actually played pool at his house, so I still beat him at nine ball. I think he lets me beat him at nine ball, but he definitely smashes me at eight ball. So I'm slowly teaching him nine ball.
And one thing you can't underestimate as well is like the stuff you learn doing something like this. I mean, I got not only like reading and preparing all the news, that what we were saying is like the tenacity you need, the way to motivate yourself. I think I learned how to do that basically from Linux Outlaws. I had this passion. I wanted to produce this show every week, and I was doing other stuff. You know, I was doing work later on, but I had to make it happen. And I just learned how you do that, like how you keep at something, and you know, keep chipping away at that. And I mean, that is you can't underestimate that. I'm actually one thing I'm doing is I'm becoming I'm changing my job. I'm trying to go freelance now. And one of the things why I think I can do that is because I know that I can produce something, have a project like this on my own. I can motivate myself.
And I found the same thing. So towards the end of the show, the last 2 or 3 years, I was working full time, you know, 9 to 5, whatever, mostly, and then doing gigs in the night with the band, and then doing things like Og Camp, which we started together, and all these other things. And it got really hard. There were times when I was like, I just don't fancy reading 100 emails right now, and doing that. And I'm sure Fab was the same with the news. And but I did, and I got used to it. And we changed the day that we used to always do the show in the night, pretty much. So it'd be, for us in Europe anyway, it would be, you know, 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock, something like that, on a night. And we changed the nights all the time because both of us had loads of stuff to do. And people would go, why can't you just pick a regular night and do it on like Monday night? So we'd do it on Monday night for a while. And then somebody would come up and I'd say to Fab, I can't do Monday night, or he couldn't do it. And then we'd go, let's do Tuesday, let's do Thursday. And we'd keep moving it. And people didn't like that because they were like, they wanted to tune in at a certain time. But that really changed because of the live element. I mean, the whole fact, we recorded it whenever we wanted. We did, yeah. I mean, but we recorded it whenever we wanted it.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is that we actually did it. We kept doing it pretty much every week. I mean, okay, that was like, I'd go on holiday for like 3 weeks or something, and we'd catch up. We'd actually do two shows a week.
And we could record, pre-record. Yeah, pre-record and release stuff later. Because for us, it was a podcast, essentially. It was an audio podcast. And you know, if people are just – people download it and on demand and listen when they want. And that's the point of a podcast, really. You don't have to be there at a certain time. Listen to it when you want, whenever it's out. You know, that's the joy of RSS feeds and other things.
I think you mean Netcast.
Oh, all right, Netcast, yeah. You know what I mean. Sorry, yeah, well picked up on that. Or if you actually in the free software community, you mean an Ogcast, which is what people call it over there.
Yep. So we're almost out of time. This hour has gone by so quickly. This would normally be the place where I ask you, is there anything we didn't cover that you wanted to make sure our audience is aware of?
Fab, you go first.
I don't know. I just would like people to know that you can do that if you want to. You know, if you really want to do it, it's not that hard. Especially audio only is manageable. If you do video, it's quite a lot more work. But I mean, you can these days you can get USB microphones and you can do a lot of that stuff in software. I mean, Danami, we're old school. We have like mixers and compressors lying around these days, and I have a very fancy microphone. But you know, you don't have to have that. You can just do it.
Yeah, you can definitely just do it. I mean, that would be my, you know, my kind of message to people is just try it. You can get a microphone that you can connect to a smartphone now that's pretty decent and just record something. I mean, all right, it's not going to sound like, you know, a massive radio production at first, but you start from that and you work your way up. So I suppose my kind of three tips, which I never did give, would be, this is going to sound really cheesy, but would be just do it, basically. That's three things. So that's my Shia LaBeouf, like, do it. Kind of moment. Wait, for you.
Do it is two words though, so it's just do it.
Well, it's just do it. Word. He says just do it, doesn't he? He goes, just do it. Just do it. So there you go.
Yeah. And actually, a reverb bike has a. Just go ahead. Sorry.
No. Just one thing I also wanted to say is I'm really happy to be on this show. Like Twit is one of the reasons we started Linux Outlaws. Security Now was the second podcast I ever listened to. That was like 2005, this just shortly after it started, and it's just like one of the reasons Linux Outlaw sounded as good as it did is because I was listening to Twitch shows and I was like, we need to be as good as that. It needs to sound as good as that.
Yeah, and it's the same for me as well. Sorry, I'll stop talking over you, Randall. But the same thing for me. I heard, so the whole podcasting thing, I originally got into because in 2006, I think it was, I heard a show called Net at Night that Leo used to do with Amber MacArthur, and I'd never heard a podcast before, and I was like, oh, this is quite cool, and I was like, I wonder how you do that, and then it all kind of led from there.
Yeah, and actually Reverb Mike has a comment in the chat room. Hasn't Floss Weekly been on every day of the week at some point, Monday through Friday at least? I do believe so, and I think it was on Saturdays for a while too, as I recall, back in the early day. I was taping ahead of Leo's radio show, so you don't have to come into the studio once, back when Leo was actually a co-host, or actually the host of the show. I was just the lowly co-host and producer and showrunner and all that sort of stuff. So that was back in the day. I want to ask you my favorite two questions. Might as well, scripting language and text editor. Go ahead.
Do you want to start, Fab, or shall I?
No, you go first.
I know Randall's not going to like, but I'm going to say them anyway.
You go first.
So my favorite scripting language, if we're talking scripting and not like, you know, anything more low level, is Python, I'm afraid. Although I did do some Perl recently after we had a Perl guest on, and I actually installed Perl and did, well, I started using it and stuff. But to be honest, I do a lot of Python stuff. And also I love Vim and all that sort of stuff. So I'm sorry, Randall, but there you go. I'm a disappointment.
It's okay.
It's
okay.
It's pretty much the same for me too. I mean, for me, it's definitely Python. I used to do a little bit of Ruby back in the day, but Python all the way now. And it's Vim, Vim, because it's just, you know, that's what's there, what you can depend on. Although that's probably cheating because I use Atom most of the time now. I mean, I'm a journalist. I don't write code so much. You know, I write text. I write everything in Markdown and just do that in Atom.
Well, guys, it's been really fun having you guys on and being able to relive some legacy history and even compare some notes about the differences of what I have to do for every week for the show. I was going to mention the most difficult things for this show for me behind the scenes is getting a co-host from a rotating panel of co-hosts. It seems like it's pulling teeth every week now. I should have enough. And then also getting guests, because my show doesn't run without a guest. And we had to cancel a show last week because the guest bailed at the last second. So I can't do the show without a guest. And luckily this week it's the two of you being my guest, which has made it really awesome and wonderful. But those are really the two sticking points for me. Those are because this show is guest driven. I have to have a co-host to be able to bounce things off of. Although I didn't have one today, I figured I'd just let you guys talk for a while if I needed a break. And that seemed to work out pretty well. So
we can do that.
I was going to do both. I didn't even do this. It's another visual joke. But I was going to say, I'll put my hat on when I'm in guest mode and I'll take it off when I'm in co-host mode. But actually, my head's just reflecting the light too much. So I'll just keep the hat on. That's probably better for everyone concerned.
Nope. Okay, well, here's the part where I send you guys away so I can get the rest of my show done. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you
very much.
All right, so that was Dan Lynch, a fellow co-host of this show, but also had his own show for 7 years, and his cohort and is Cohort in Crime, Fab. We're glad they got to come on the show and talk about Linux Outlaws. So let me do the closing parts of the show here. So coming up next week, we have Shotcut, which is a free open source cross-platform video editor, which sounds like it should be a lot of fun. Linstor comes after that, High Availability DRDB. Linstor is an open source management tool designed to manage block storage devices for large Linux server clusters. That's going to be a buzzword bingo show, I'm pretty sure. Haxt, following that, is an open source tool that aims to make online course creation accessible to all instructors. Wrapping up the currently scheduled guests, looking for more always, is Monero, which is cryptocurrency, but private, untraceable, and fungible. That sounds pretty fun. If you go to the big spreadsheet for this show, that's go to the main place for the show, which is twit.tv/floss. You'll see a link from there to the big spreadsheet, which is going to keep me up to date who's actually being in the queue and stuff. If you have any other suggestions, preferably not crypto something, okay? I just want to cut back on those newer shows. But if you have other suggestions, please tell the project leader or the community coordinator to email me, and especially if it's not cryptocurrency, that's it. So we have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays when we normally tape this show at live.twit.tv. And we took a number of questions from the chat room today. That was really nice. I love it when people do that. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+ or at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+ and at Merlin on Twitter. So what I'm plugging today is I am really excited. I just got approval, and this is in part thanks to this show. I got approval to become a Dart and Flutter GDE. That's a Google Developer Expert. And it gives me access to information. It gives me access to resources so that I can promote Dart and Flutter. And part of it was due to the fact that some of the people that needed to approve me have been on this show. So it's they already know me because we already had conversations about that. But it's a big responsibility, but it's also a privilege. Because I'll get to represent and help promote Dart and Flutter, because I'm all in on that. I also was just recently interviewed for Software Engineering Daily, the episode for July 11th, 2018. I don't have a URL that points at that, but if you Google Software Engineering Daily Randall Schwartz, I did a whole hour on Flutter. So if you want more details about that and also about where it's going, turns out Dart 2.0 hit yesterday. So my timing for getting my GDE qualification, very, very good, because now it's really going to start taking off with Dart 2.0. I'll be at DragonCon for Labor Day weekend. So if you happen to be there and you see me, please come up, say hi, fan of the show or whatever. Or if you just happen to see me anyway, you can, even if you don't like, if you aren't a fan of the show, well, why would you be listening to this then? Whatever. Okay. I'll also be in All Things Open in Raleigh in October and at Seagull in November. I'm giving a presentation in Portland. If you're local, you'll see the announcement anyway. I'm actually giving my Flutter talk at the local Portland Linux Users Group meeting, so that'll be kind of fun. I think that's all I have to plug. And normally, I'd turn it back to my co-host for plugging things, but I'll let him do that on another day because we're running out of time. So we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.